Welcome to the Filmmakers Uncut Podcast. What are we doing today, Poya?
I think we're just gonna talk to each other and just ask each other random questions about either filmmaking or business and just have a little conversation.
I like that. A little bit more candid, less, you know, straight to the point. We just kind of like explore.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. I have a list of questions that I prepared. These are not really even filmmaker related, some of these. So I'm kind of curious to kind of hear your answers as well. Did you peek at my questions?
A little bit. Oh. But
that's good.
I think we're going to answer both questions, like both of us, whatever we ask anyway. So yeah.
I wrote the questions down, but I did not prepare. So
me neither.
Okay, good. Yeah. I like it. So I'll start first. My first question for you is, what made you want to make origin films?
What made me want to make origin films? I think for like many years, I was kind of looking for my passion of like what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So once I went into a meditation retreat in Thailand, I was literally just like putting a book down and going through like everything I really liked. And like one of the last things I came to was videography. So once I came out of videography, then I gave you a call. I'm like, yo, let's start our production company. But I think I'm really, really passionate about making films and or just making like videos in general, which we did, you know, as kids. Mm-hmm. And then now that we're really like into it and 5 years into it, I really enjoy like the business aspect of it as well.
Yeah.
So just kind of like mashing both together. Mm-hmm. Really goes hand in hand, and that's probably why I really wanted to make a production company.
Yeah, I feel like that's an unfair question because I kind of already knew what you were going to say.
Right.
But I feel like a lot of it maybe secretly had a lot more to do with entrepreneurship. And I think maybe film for you was like something that you enjoyed, but I think definitely like the building, the business aspect was like what really made you like, I guess, connect with it. Because
right.
if it was just like filmmaking, you know, like it probably wouldn't be the same. Like the entrepreneurship side, I feel like really gravitates towards like your personality.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like even when we're on set a lot of the times, it's like I'm kind of trying to take care of either like clients or just make sure people are like happy and good on set.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, you're a bit more creative on that creative end.
That is very true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's why we have the good balance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the same question to you, what made you?
That's a tough question for me, I feel, because like, as you know, starting the company for me was, I was really hesitant, you know? I was already working like a full-time job and I was making good money. So I was like really scared to hop into it. But the way that I saw it is like, just like most people, like I didn't want to live my life just going the 9 to 5 and like hating my job and being bored, and filmmaking was always like a passion for us. So it kind of just made sense to give it a shot. And honestly, like I'm so thankful and grateful that we got to where we got, because like it could have definitely went the opposite end. Like we could have still been struggling, right? But now we're at like a really good point. And I feel like the main reason I stick with it now is because other than filmmaking, of course, being a creative and trying to take those visual ideas you have and bring it to reality, a lot of it now has to do with like helping the clients that come our way, either commercial or corporate. You know, everybody has a different goal, and it's cool to see how we can take our skills from like a business standpoint or like a creative standpoint and like help somebody achieve their specific need. Like if somebody comes to us and like, yo, I need a commercial because, oh, you know, why do you need a commercial? I want to increase traffic, I want to get more sales, you know, something along those lines. And it's like, how can we help them do that using this media, which is video? And yeah, I don't know. That's why I'm like, I grew to love it. I feel like in the beginning it was so hard, you know, like a lot of butting heads and like doing all the free jobs that we did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like dealing with such annoying clients, right? For like 3 years straight, right? But then it's like now we're at that point where people trust us to do what we do best, and it's like the best feeling. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the times it's like people do a lot of things for free, which is great. But then you get those clients who are like super picky at like a low budget state versus when you go into a little bit of a higher budget, clients kind of come to you and they're like, okay, like we know that you're professional and this is why we're hiring you. So we're going to let you you know, make these decisions on it, and they're not very as picky. And I feel like that goes both for like origin film side and the wedding side as well, right?
Yeah. It's kind of funny when you bring that up, because like everyone in our industry, like we all know that to get your name out there, like you kind of got to do those cheap jobs, and you kind of got to do free work and dip your toes in every kind of industry. But yeah, you're right. It's weird how like when you do the cheap jobs and the free jobs, they always expect like a million different things, because they're like, oh, you're like, you're an up and comer, you know, like this is an opportunity for you type of thing. And it's like they abuse the shit out of you. And then it's like, you know, fast forward 5 years into your career and you're charging like, you know, high end clients a certain amount of money, but you're coming to that project with almost the same attitude anyways. But they just respect your skills. It's such a weird paradox. It's like work for free, do more work, get paid a lot, have the same attitude, and they just trust you to do what you do. It's a really weird thing.
But exactly. Yeah. I feel like it's a very like good perspective for people to take in and be like, oh, I could eventually just like charge more, and the clients do treat you like better. But at the beginning, it is for sure that you almost have to do free work and get like your name out there, because no one is, if you don't have like good work or work at all, it's like, why would someone even hire you to do any of that?
Definitely need that portfolio. For anybody who's like in school or who's like training, definitely build your portfolio. Like, we get a lot of people reaching out to us sometimes, and they're all like, I'm fresh out of school. And it's like, oh, that's great, no problem with people coming straight out of school, but let me see your portfolio. And it's like the projects that they did for school,
right,
which are not really a good representation most of the time of like their work, because it's like, oh, you know, the assignment was how to do a green screen or something. So they're showing us like the before and after work of the green screen. And it's like, that's great, but it's not practical. You know, it's like, how did you use your green screen in like a film or a commercial or with a product? Like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can YouTube how to green screen.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. Like, I want to see like your actual creative skills, or like
the commercial you did, like the actual work. Yeah. That you actually did. Yeah. Because at the end of the day too, it's like there's so many people reaching out for work that if we were to like go through everyone's portfolio and watch like 10 minutes of work each, it's just like a lot, you know? So typically you do research, like we look at work how anyone else would look at anything, where it's just like you quickly, you know, look at it and you're like, okay, 30 seconds, am I caught to this? Like, do I enjoy this? Am I going to keep watching this? Right? So you're not really seeing like the full spectrum of the whole project. So that like first minute, like 30 seconds really matters. And that first video you have on your website really matters as well.
Yeah. Which is another thing as well, when it comes to like building that portfolio, like having a website or somewhere to display your work is so much more impactful than getting like a Google Drive link.
Oh yeah.
So many times people will just send us like a link through their Google Drive, and you know, it may be a great video, but just like the way I'm experiencing it in itself does definitely like kind of deter the experience. Doesn't make it seem as professional.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We are in a like very creative space, so anything creative really matters.
Oh, 100%.
On that end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to my second question here, which is, what is your favorite part of your job?
Favorite part of my job? Ooh. I think it like fluctuates depending. Sometimes it's like, a lot of the times it's shooting, like being on set, of course, and just, you know, either we're creating a new like commercial or a project, and it's fun being on set and seeing how the day goes and like the different lightings we have, and just like the connections you make through the set as well, with like different people that are either, you know, being hired on or new people you're meeting, like actors, is like really fun. So I would say that's definitely like one of my favorite parts. And then other days when I'm shooting like way too much, like where we just have back-to-back days, I just enjoy like sitting on the laptop and then just thinking of like our next business move, or like, you know, what we should be doing next, and kind of just like working towards that as well.
I see. Yeah. No, that's good. You're like infield, outfield. You love them both the same.
Yeah. It's definitely good. Like a balance, I would say.
I would say for myself, my favorite part about filmmaking specifically, directing, 100%. Just like working with somebody in front of the camera, you know, they are obviously uncomfortable, depends, right? Commercial, obviously you're working with like professional actors, but it really helps to be able to communicate and convey like the ultimate goal. You know, if we're working on like, let's say an athletic commercial, like, oh, that's good, but what if we want to make them relate to the emotion which you're feeling, which could be like at that moment, depressed or something. Like you could be going, maybe the athlete is suffering through some traumatic loss and they're, you know, dealing with their sadness through exercise, right? And it's like communicating that to the actor and seeing how that like transforms the feeling on screen, I think is a really, really fun experience. And it's something that like evolves, I found as well. Like, you know, when we first started, it was definitely harder to get somebody to like understand what I was trying to convey. And then now it's like, it's just so much easier. Right. And it's like, I don't even know how it changed, but it just has. That's definitely a really fun part of filmmaking. And then I would say lighting, because like it's so important. You know what I mean? Like people have no idea. Well, I'm sure they do if they're watching a filmmaker's podcast. But yeah, it's just being able to like change a couple of things, you know, tweak the lighting in the background or maybe try to add like something interesting in the foreground, and like it changes everything. Like this lighting setup, we spent like 2 hours changing the lights around just to get this light, and it's actually simpler than the original setup. You know, I wanted to do like the lantern and get like some hair lights and practicals in the background, and then it just didn't work, so we pivoted, and now we're just using 3 tube lights, and I love the look. I personally think it's like dramatic and also like dynamic, and yeah. So lighting is definitely one of my favorite parts of the job.
Well, I know with you talking about directing as well, a lot of like new filmmakers or people fresh out of school want to be a director. Did you always think you wanted to be a director? Like, was that always the route you wanted?
That's a tough one as well. Because as you know, like when we grew up doing film together, it was never really like, oh, I'm going to take on the directing role. It was like we had ideas, and then we would just bounce ideas off each other. And then when it came to working with other people that we wanted to be in our video, we would just like explain to them what we wanted or what we thought.
Yeah. There was, I guess, growing up, we never really had specific roles. It wasn't like this whole professional, you know, spot where you're just like, okay, like I'm this and you're that, right? We kind of just like took on every single role and did everything possible to get the job done, which I think really goes into like our company now too, right? Where, you know, we're able to, you know, budget down sometimes, and we're like, hey, if you don't want to bring more people on, like we're able to handle the work, but also warning, we can only handle so much of the work, right? 100%. So, and it's, your video is just going to churn out better with, you know, one specific person for each role instead of 2-3 people for everything, right? So it was definitely helpful in that sense.
Yeah. So I guess to answer your question, no, I never imagined getting into the directing role, but I think it made sense, you know, when we started taking on projects. Now I can actually consider myself more of a project manager and then a director of photography, because I still love lighting, and I definitely direct like or co-direct, but I think a lot of the times now it's like I can focus on helping the client like meet the right team member that will bring their vision into reality, and then I can just focus on assisting in that aspect, and then it also allows us to kind of like scale out more,
right? Yeah,
because I feel like directors are so involved in the pre-development of a project. Like, you know, they're talking to every department, making sure that the vision is perfect. And it's like, I can't do that for 10 clients a month.
Right.
It's just burnout.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
My next question for you is, if you could only do one kind of video category for the rest of your career, what would that video category be?
I actually saw this question and I kind of thought about it, but then I like stopped thinking about it. I don't know if something came up. But it's definitely like a very hard question, because I feel like I haven't explored every video category at this point enough to be like, I want to do this for like the rest of my life.
Right.
One of those being like making films. Like we have not made like enough films yet. I feel like you need to make at least like 10 films, you know, before you're like, I really enjoy this. And sometimes after the 6th, 7th, 8th, or 9th one, you're like, I don't want to do this anymore.
That's true.
You know? Mm-hmm. So it's definitely like a really hard question, but without like some of the experiences I've had, and if I was to choose one right now, it's really hard because like commercials are fun because it's always different.
Yeah. There's other ones you can think of too, right? Like, I feel like some of the things we don't think of is like, I don't know, travel films or even documentaries.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't consider that like feature films or like, mm-hmm. you know, getting into the movies, mm-hmm. but that's also something.
Travel films would be fun. I think the only problem with travel films is like, I don't want to shoot when I'm traveling because you're kind of like enjoying the present moment. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I need to shoot this. Mm-hmm. So it's just like this thing that kind of takes you out of traveling, hence why I don't think I'd ever do that much travel film, but I haven't done it enough also to do that. But everything has its own type of fun in it. Mm-hmm. Like right now it's like commercials are fun because you get to do so much different sets. It's always changing. Corporate is fun also, like corporate events type and slash corporate mm-hmm. are fun because you're always meeting like either like CEOs and, you know, people who work like really deep within the company, and you're able to have a conversation with them or just go join their event, you know, and have fun with them. Like when we shot with like Sledgehammer, I was just like in their office chilling, talk to them, shoot some scenes, go, you know, there, mm-hmm. right, have some fun, see how like their company aspects work as well. So it has its, I think every industry kind of has its own fun, like right. twist.
Yeah, the yeah. pros and the cons.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. even music videos. Yeah. Like,
but if you had to choose, like right now, you know, a gun was to your head and was like, okay, man, you could either do commercials, feature films, documentaries, you know, weddings, corporate events. Did I say music videos already? I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's not set in stone, but you know, a gun's to your head, you have to make a decision.
Probably music videos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Music videos are like a lot of fun. I feel like yeah. I feel like it's perfect for you. Because then you're just like an upbeat, fun guy, you know?
Yeah.
So you can just like be in like your zone, but still be making a film. And like, yeah. I feel like the type of people who are in the music video industry, you know, like artists, like they love that. They can work yeah. with you better when they don't feel like it's so serious.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Everything's like chillax.
Yeah, well, it should yeah. be chillax yeah, anyways.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Until shit hits the fan.
Yeah, music videos would be like really fun. I don't think people realize how much work a music video takes.
Though. No.
It takes like no. way more work than corporate stuff for yeah. sure. It's, 'cause I remember one of the first like music videos we made, I think we spent like over like 120 hours, I think, on like a music video, just pre-planning a music video, which is like, oh my god, it's just like mm-hmm. every scene, just planning yeah. all that is just a yeah. lot a yeah. lot of work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really unfortunate with music videos as well, is because like it would be such a great thing to like niche into, but like, oh, I'm a specialist in music videos, but the market is just really, really bad. Like yeah. a lot of people who want music videos are like, you know, most of the time, like they're up and comer music videos.
Exactly.
TJ went out. Just wait for that little blue thing to disappear.
It just goes away.
Okay. What was I saying? Yeah, the music video industry, like, it would be so great to niche into, but the problem is that like the market is normally like up and comer music artists. Like, they're not in record labels. They mm-hmm. might have a manager, but they don't have the budget. So they're coming to you with like even 5 to 10 grand for a music video is not really a lot to work with, right? Like
exactly.
you might be able to do some run and gun, like, you know, with Sony A7S3s or FX3s, right? But like, there's just, what about set design? What about yeah. background? What about outfits?
Yeah.
You know, like one scene alone you know, just setting up the decor and the lights, that should be like $5,000 to $10,000.
Right.
In just in like rentals and the team that you need to really make it look good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, unfortunately, music videos would be sick, but it's so hard, I find, to get a good clientele.
Definitely, yeah. And a lot of people just think, like you said, you can run and gun music videos. Mm-hmm. But if you're a very like creative person, and you have all these ideas you want to get across, you need a lot of time mm-hmm. and people to get it done. And running and gunning is just like, the video just ends up looking too like any other run and gun
yeah.
type of video,
yeah.
right? And any really like cool themed music video coming out just takes a lot of like set design mm-hmm. and people to make it happen.
Yeah, it's a music video, you know, like mm-hmm. your whole entire... whole entire objective, majority of the time anyways, is either to tell a story or just be like extremely visually engaging so people can't look away,
right?
There's always like some sort of crazy theme in the sense that like it's the same effect over and over and over. And it's like there's a lot of pre-planning that goes into that. You can't just run and gun it if you want a good music video.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. I can keep going with questions here. Do you have any questions?
You should go through all your questions and then I'll go to mine.
Okay. I like that. can you remember a time in your life where you really wanted your camera or you really wanted to film something, but you didn't? And can you talk a little bit about like why you wanted your camera in that moment? If you had an experience like that.
Mm-hmm. I think one memory or time I would want my camera would probably just be when we were kids. I feel like kids are really lucky right now that their parents and their family members and their friends are able to like grab so much footage of them as being like children, you know, like ever mm-hmm. since, you know, you're born now,
yeah.
your parents all have a camera that shoots 4K and it's in the room. And just having like all those videos is such a huge like story building opportunity for you to like dish those together and then be able to build stories out of them of either your childhood or even just like studying yourself and, you know, developing like some self-awareness of what you were and how you were as a child, mm-hmm. I think is like a huge plus. So I guess it's not really answering the question, but in a way I wish everyone else just had cameras. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think that's an appropriate response. Just saying like your childhood doesn't have to be one specific memory, but yeah, mm-hmm. being able to record your upbringing and just kind of look back on those past memories.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of what filmmaking is, right? Well, a certain sense of filmmaking.
Definitely.
Like, right. Like yeah. recording a moment, recording an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though I wrote this question down, I don't really think I have an answer.
That's fine.
Yeah.
It's definitely like a hard question because it's like when, mm-hmm. when would you ever need a camera? Aside from every time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if I were to remember one moment, well, luckily I had a camera. It wasn't the best camera. It was like one of those old, the ones like you get from Walmart, the Kodaks. Yeah, the Kodaks, the film ones where you go click, you know, flash, and then you can't even preview it. Yeah, you get it developed later. Yeah, I remember this one time I was just at home and my mom was still working at this time. My sister wasn't born yet. And I just remember like, seeing my mom in her office just working, and she was just like on the phone doing what she does. And for some reason in that moment, just like I realized how incredible my mom was, mm-hmm. like to do what she does despite like all of the shit that she had to go through. And I took a picture of it, and it was on that, you know, crappy Kodak camera, and I think I was like 9 years old at the time, so it didn't turn out good. But I really wish that I had a physical imprint or memory of that, because I can remember it in my head, but I don't have it physically. And I just wish I had that to kind of like almost like show my mom, or just like have to remember that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, but I had a camera, so it doesn't really mm-hmm. count towards that question.
It's really cute. I feel like people don't realize how fortunate we are now, where we're able to, like in that moment, you weren't able to view it. So if the photo came out bad, you're like, oh, the photo came out bad. Now that memory's like gone in a way, right? Of mm-hmm. not have, or that photo is gone. But at least now it's like you can view everything, and any camera you're holding is way better than what we used to have. Mm-hmm. And then that complaint where like, I don't have, you know, good enough equipment is just like, there's no way you don't have good enough equipment at this point, you know? Mm-hmm. You can have your iPhone that shoots 4K, right? At this point, I think every iPhone within the last
almost
like
every
four
phone.
Or 5 years, yeah, every phone shoots in 4K. You can literally stick a mic on that and you're pretty much good to go, you know? Coming mm-hmm. in new, get a little gimbal. It's a good camera, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, 100%. Like mm-hmm. some of the iPhone like 14 Pro footage or whatever I see these days, it actually is like mind blowing to me that they just have this camera in their pocket at all times.
And yeah.
They just do everything from yeah. this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. A perfect example is like when we were shooting a reality TV show, mm-hmm. The director would literally take out his iPhone at points and then start shooting sideways on his iPhone, which I'm sure is going to be used like within that show as well. And it's like, yeah, you're shooting reality TV, it's like the camera could be a little bit, you know, worse, you yeah. know, even though it's not, it's still 4K and it shoots great. So
yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like you don't need the lens behind it, mm-hmm. then the camera is like really good. And even the iPhone has good like lenses attached to it. Obviously it's just person depending and specific for the project, right?
If yeah.
Like, you're probably not going to shoot a whole wedding on a...
I've seen people do that, though.
On a phone, yeah.
I've seen people
That's
do
That's true.
It.
If they're not going to... If, like, the client's okay with it, it's like, why not? Like, yeah. you could shoot a good wedding. That'd yeah. be a good video.
It is? No, I'm serious. Like, if this was, like, you know how Joe Rogan likes to pull up videos? If we had a guy to pull up videos right now, I would show you that video. It's freaking sick. These guys literally just take their iPhones and they film the whole wedding for a client, and you watch the highlight film at the end, and you're like, damn, this is actually, it's actually better than like some work that I've seen other people do
yeah.
with like 4-man teams.
Yeah.
Like legit.
What do you think the biggest problem is in weddings? I feel like one of the biggest problems that I see is the editing. It's not even like specifically the shooting that goes behind like a lot of films. Cause I remember when we're bringing like new editors in and we send our footage to like a new editor and it comes back and it's like, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, but we've shot so many weddings at this point, we know our footage wasn't that bad, right? And then you send it to our regular editor or another editor who's, you know, good at editing, and it comes back and you're like, yeah, this is what it should have looked like, right?
100%.
So like the mm-hmm. editing behind it can make like such a huge difference. And I don't think people understand how much of your footage can even be saved from good editing.
Yeah.
Like you can make yeah. a bad shooter look good with yeah. good editing.
Yeah. I feel like when it comes down to it, like for any type of filmmaking project, like editing should be one of the most expensive parts of your project. Because if you're not like sourcing a good editor, mm-hmm. or if you're not a good editor yourself and you're not like, if you don't show the client the value in that aspect, you're just going to miss the mark 100%.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Yeah, editing is everything, honestly. You can have like a great execution, but if the editor doesn't know how to put it together, doesn't know how to... I mean, there's so many different aspects too, right? Like color grading, sound design, visual, like VFX, right? So
right.
yeah, but 100% editing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Since we're on like editing, I think it's kind of important. So I think the question is like, when did we stop editing? At what point were we like backing off editing? Because yeah. I feel like it's kind of important to talk about, because a lot of people are not fully editors, or they end up not liking editing, or you realize, hey, I can be shooting a lot more and editing a lot less if I just give away my editing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like an important topic to talk about. It's like, when did we stop editing and why?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you should answer that question first. I feel like mm-hmm. I feel like you might have some things you already want to kind of mention about that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think we stopped editing like 2 years ago, and we stopped editing once we had enough budget and money to be like, okay, let's stop editing ourselves because our time is now worth more than what we're doing in edit, and then pay an editor to do it for us. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like the best move we made, because then it ends up opening up so much like free time. Mm-hmm. And I think within a business and running a business, it's always smart to think about, where can we save more time so I can spend time on things I more like to do.
Mm-hmm. Or just well. Better at. Or yeah. just better at.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. right? Because yeah. in the long run, it's like, once you've, you know, succeeded at your goals, like becoming a really good at, you know, either lighting or cinematography or directing, mm-hmm. having enough money where your lifestyle is like good and, you know, you're well paid and you can feed your family and do whatever you need, you know, mm-hmm. wherever that number is for you. Then it comes down to like, do I enjoy what I do? Right? That's like the end goal of everything is like, are you really happy and do you enjoy exactly what you're doing? So mm-hmm. it's really important to, as you're like growing the company, is to get rid of things that you're not enjoying as much and hire people into that and then just go more towards things that you enjoy mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, I feel like mm-hmm. that's definitely person depending. I mean, if you like editing, you know, maybe you want to do filming and editing. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. You definitely talked about a lot of things. Like you almost talked about like life work balance, right? Yeah. Like not taking on so much of a project that you can't enjoy other aspects of your life. Yeah, you hit a lot of points. I would say it really made sense in terms of scalability. You know, when we got so busy that editing our own work affected our other clients, it was like, okay, we have to bring on other people. And what I also realized as well is that like I'm way too picky when it comes to editing. So that would just like, you know, I would just dive so deep into a project that it would just take longer and longer because I kept on going back to change things. And it's like, again, this is going to affect my next client. You know, now this person's just been waiting. And at the same time, I'm probably not the best editor, you know. Like I'm picking myself in terms of like what the final product is going to be, but maybe that's just because like I'm personally invested in my own editing style. But then once we started bringing on editors and testing their skills, and I saw like the final result, I was like, this is good. And you did this in a week? Like this would have taken me 3 weeks. I'm clearly not that great of an editor. So why would I, you know, why would I edit these if there's someone else who can do it better? And then What you're talking about in terms of budget, I guess that is true, like 100%, like if you have the budget for an editor, but at the same time, you could always just increase your budget, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what we do now. Like we include the cost of a editor in our pricing. Yeah. But I think that's when it made the most sense. When we were just so busy that we couldn't handle our own editing because it would affect our other projects. And yeah, it just made sense.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be upsetting like other clients and delivering late. Mm-hmm. People just don't like that mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you know. So yeah. It's just smart to get that handled.
From a production or company or freelancer aspect as well, though, I think it does depend. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. we are dishing out, you know, let's say we're working with a corporate client. We're dishing out like 10 videos a month, ranging from 5 to 10 grand. Some people might be working on one project a month worth 50 grand. Mm-hmm. And maybe they would prefer to do the editing themselves because they save more money in that sense. And they're not worried about scaling out. They are totally okay, you know, producing, shooting, sourcing
doing
out
the whole
team.
Nine yards. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely.
So I think it depends.
There's YouTubers out there, right, that make YouTube videos and they do everything themselves. And, you know, that's kind of what they're known for is their own work.
Yeah,
too,
and they love it.
Exactly.
Love it. So, mm-hmm. yeah. But at the same time, like, there are a lot of YouTubers that we know now that used to do their editing that 100% source it, and you can tell.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And thank God for good editors now.
Yes, yes. If you're a good editor, hit us up. Okay. I'm almost done my list of questions here, and we're getting pretty far here. It doesn't look like we're.
I'm just like, yeah. At this point, I'm like, is our cameras going to turn off soon,
or our lights?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm getting a little bit more technical here, for the camera nerds and the cinematography nerds out here. But what kind of camera do you use, and why?
I use the iPhone 14. Well, we both use the same camera, the Sony A7S III. Mm-hmm. I think you're like a lot more knowledgeable than me within cameras. Mm-hmm. So I usually let you pick out the cameras. But from the knowledge of my cameras and, you know, the A7S III, it's an amazing camera. Like from moving from the A6300 and the A6500, which was our first starter camera, to now where we own the A7s, it's just like, oh my God, like the capabilities of the camera, the low light. Mm-hmm. We used to shoot weddings and bring in like humongous lights mm-hmm. into a wedding and just like push them out into the dance floor, right? Because yeah. all the lights would turn off and we're like, yo, we don't want grainy footage. Like, dude. And then obviously we had like every 1 in 10 to 15 weddings, someone would be like, hey, can you dim those lights?
It was or, like, definitely turn off more than lights? 1 out of 10. It was like every 3 weddings, 1 out of 3.
Yeah, so when the Sonys came out and you're like, oh, we don't need lights anymore. Like, this is great. Like. Yeah. Yeah, definitely mm-hmm. helped us out in that sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, like, amazing camera. Mm-hmm. It just makes your life easier. You know, with every new camera that comes out mm-hmm. every few years, it just makes your life easier and helps you become better at creating, mm-hmm. you know?
You know what? Here's a question that I just thought of, kind of relating to something that you brought up. So, you know, for a lot of filmmakers, if they're like new into the industry, maybe they're already working with some of the gear that they have. When do you think is the right time to make the investment for, like, you know, that next level camera gear? Mm-hmm. Like, when do you think is like a good time?
I think it's a good time to make an investment for your next camera when you first have enough money that you're like, okay, I can do the, like, I can comfortably move over to this camera and not, and still be able to like do my normal things that I need to do. And when you have enough like business coming in, I feel like a lot of people will invest like hugely into like these amazing cameras without like any business coming in. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, how are you going to make that like return in investment? Mm-hmm. Right. So it's very important to, you know, kind of calculate it out and be like, okay, like if you're doing weddings, for example, you know, like 4 weddings can take, not even like could pay off a Sony a7S III, right? Like mm-hmm. even way less than that.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, in that situation, I should then just buy it because, you know, it's profitable in that situation. It's a good investment. Mm-hmm. But obviously don't upgrade your cameras like every year or two. You know, mm-hmm. I would wait like 5 to 10 years per and then upgrade. Cause you know, now that we have the Sony a7S IIIs, it's like, what is the next big thing that's going to even come out? Also, like, is technology even advancing enough for the next big thing? You know, like, do we need to shoot 8K right now? Like, no, you know, like, why would we even shoot 8K? And even our Sonys right now, we don't even use the most capacity of them, right? Like, the detail, like mm-hmm. we're not even shooting high details on our SD cards right now because we don't want to store way more than we need to,
yeah,
right, for no like reason at all. Yeah. So what's the point of upgrading at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would basically say the same thing. I mean, we used the A63 and the A6500 for like 3 years waiting for the next level camera because everything else just didn't make sense. Like, oh, am I really going to spend like an extra $2,500 to $3,000 to get, you know, 4K 30 or 4K 60, but it's still 8-bit, you know what I mean? And then when right. the A7S III came out, it was like, it just made so much sense. And just, yeah. But the funny thing was, is that when we were still shooting with the A63 and the A6500, we were still getting a lot of clients. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't charging, well, we were charging like for weddings specifically, like, maybe in the 2,500 to 3 grand range, and now we're like in the 4 to 5 grand range, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like people were still paying a lot of money for that quality of work. So it's like, yeah, does it really make sense to upgrade to this like camera that's only going to increase maybe the quality of your work by like maybe 15-20%, or do you just right. wait until that big camera, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it depends too though, because, you know, I know a lot of people who want to jump directly into the cinema world, and maybe they just came out of school, they're working with the A7 III or something equivalent to that, and then their next camera they want is going to be like, you know, red Komodo,
right?
Or like, oh, I want to save up for like an RE35, like these right. crazy cameras that are like thousands and thousands of dollars because they want to get right into that field. Yeah, it's a tough decision because I've seen people definitely do that path and it's worked mm-hmm. out for them. but it's a scary jump for sure.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about like the Alexa and the Reds and you actually going into film, mm-hmm. then it's kind of a different perspective mm-hmm. because you can't just like walk into a film and be like, I've never used the like Ari before, but we're going to use it, you know, mm-hmm. and like, I'm going to DP this thing. It's just like not going to work out. You need to know how the camera works and like every aspect of it. And that's what you're getting hired for. So in those situations, it's like, you need to know your camera. So owning that camera might be the, you know, one of the ways, or just renting it until you can own it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Renting is also a good option as well. Like mm-hmm. if you're trying to debate whether or not upgrading to the next camera is worth it, why don't you just tell your clients you already have the camera, right?
Yeah.
And then on the production day, just rent it out. And if,
exactly.
And if you're getting more clients and the work that you produce from these you know, projects that you're getting is getting you those bigger projects, then it makes sense. So you don't need to, like, you know, also jump right into it. You can make the small investment in trying it out and getting the final result from the camera that you were going to invest in anyways, and see how it actually changes your business mm-hmm. or your career. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as you grow, there's definitely gonna be opportunities where you'll be able to use the cameras you wanna use. You just have to put yourself in those opportunities.
For sure.
You know, whether getting the clients first and then getting them to pay you for that rental fee mm-hmm. is a very simple way of doing it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Perfect Next timing. Question.
Perfect timing. okay, my next question was going to be, what is your favorite gear? But maybe we don't need to do that. What is? Oh, yeah. You know, how about we say like your favorite camera setup right now? Gimbal, lights, you know, lens, everything. What is your favorite setup? What is your go-to setup for, I guess, if you were to do like a run-in gun shoot?
Yeah, definitely gimbal on a camera, gimbal 50mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wait, let me, I splurged that a little bit. I would use the Weebel S with the A7S3 and a 50mm. Because the 50mm is like, you can back up for a wide, pretty wide. Mm-hmm. And you can go close and it still looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. So it just hits both ends.
Here's a specific question for you, because we made this switch for you and it was a huge investment. And at the time, like, you know, it was almost hard justifying the reason why, but it made a lot of sense when I got to see the final product. But so originally we were working with like the base Sony 50mm f1.8. which was actually a photography lens. So it wasn't even like the best for video, but you were using that for like, I think a year. And then that lens was pretty cheap. It was like five to six.
Not even like 400.
Something like that. 400. Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you get it like, used, yeah. It's even cheaper. And then we jumped to the 50mm. So same focal length, but f1.2. So maybe like two stops extra of light. And the G Master, which was what, like, $3,000?
Yeah, about like $3,000. Yeah.
$3,000 brand new?
Yeah.
So like, now that you went from the, you know, the $500 lens, same focal length, to like literally four times the price, but the same focal length, would you say it was worth it? Like spending that extra $2,500, do you find it like makes things better for your shooting capabilities and stuff? Mm-hmm.
So the lens is heavier, mm-hmm. which is like obviously a downside to it. Cause I just always liked like a nicer, like light low setup. Weight, yeah, yeah, light setup. But the results are there. Like you can see how much more sharp the image is. It just looks a lot better. But not enough that you're like, oh damn, this is worth like this much. Like if I think we kind of just like splurged on it, but I think you'd have to be a filmmaker in order to like really see that difference versus someone just like normally seeing it. Mm-hmm. It's definitely hard, I would say, if you were like compare the two and be like, oh, this one's better than that one. I think it's worth the upgrade if you have the money, but if you don't, that other 50 is like so good. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. Yeah, I feel like the 50 f1.8 even though like the focus breathing and the focus like hunting is not the best, when you get into a certain situation like corporate shoots, it's totally fine because they're like normally stationary shots, right? If you want to, you could always go manual focus. But then I think specifically for like run and gun shots and a lot of gimbal work, which is like one of your specialties, you definitely need like perfect autofocus, mm-hmm. which just works so well with the 50 f1.2 G Master. But yeah, I agree with you too. Like to the untrained eye, you can't tell.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think this is kind of like off topic, but I feel like this comes up all the time where we're shooting a corporate event and we're shooting it at 60 frames and 120 versus mm-hmm. 24 and 50 and it's an interview shot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be a good explanation for you to like explain to people why we do that and you know why it doesn't make that much of a difference, because mm-hmm. everyone thinks you need to stick to the rule where you're shooting. Like I see it all the time. Like we've posted multiple times and mm-hmm. everyone always comments yep. and they're like, why are you shooting at 120, you know, shutter speed. Mm-hmm. So explain.
Yeah. Well, honestly, the simplest and silliest answer is because the client asked us to. Right, it's just as simple as that. Like something that makes our company different than most production companies, and we might even get a little bit of hate for this controversial topic, but we actually give our raw files to our corporate clients because we have this holistic approach, right? Like it's not like, oh, you want one 30-second commercial. Well, that's not really fair. Not commercial, corporate event. You want a 60-second promo video for your corporate event. That's great. We can definitely do that for you. But what is the added value? We always give the raw file so they can repurpose that footage if they want for other social media posts or, you know, for whatever reason. So when we're shooting in 60 frames, sometimes the client might not want to use the dialogue. They might just want to use the shot of the CEO talking or another employee talking, and instead of it and being in real time, they might want to throw it in slow motion. So because of that, we just shoot in 60 frames just for the safety of it. Now when it comes to the editing side, it's really easy to just bring it back to, you know, 24 frames. You just modify the frame rate, right, and then speed up the footage. Now that's obviously the lazy way. There's another way to do that, but again, to the untrained eye, you know, like these things that we provide the client is mostly for the added benefit of them. To us, obviously, when you're looking at it, you're like, oh, it looks a little off, right? But when the client wants something, I'm not going to argue. You know, mm-hmm. I can always make the argument for why it should be the specific technical way. But at the end of the day, if the client is happy, they will come back for more videos. They have more trust with us. And in that situation, can I like do the things that I want to do, right? So it's really situation depending. But yeah, I think that is the only answer I can really give.
To the normal person who might not know, like, does it make that much of a difference from...
I would say no, right? Like even, like when you shoot 60 frames, sure, when you put it into a 24 frame timeline, it's not gonna work. It's gonna play back in slow motion. So you have to modify the frame rate and then speed it up so it feels natural again. It's a couple extra steps. But when you look at it, it looks exactly the same for most people.
Right. And I think a lot of the times too, when we're in a corporate setting or even a wedding setting, right? You're not switching between 60 and 24 from when they're talking to when we're doing B-roll shots, because a lot of the time it's too hard to sometimes think about both things. Like mm-hmm. sometimes we'll shoot an interview and then go into B-roll with that person and they only have like 10 minutes. Like really, when you're shooting like really important people who have really busy schedules, they don't have time to, you know, for you to change all these settings, do this and that, mm-hmm. right? So, and when you have to direct them at the same time, right? And you're doing so much work, sometimes you don't think about switching to 24 frames or 60 frames. So it's easier and safer to just keep it on 60 frames throughout the whole shoot so you don't have to think about that aspect, because there's so many other different aspects you're thinking about, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Specifically for events, like when you're shooting a speaker and then trying to get a reaction shot, it's easier to just shoot everything in 60 and then modify it later.
Right.
Versus having to like, oh, I got to switch my settings, even if you have it saved to like your 1 and 2, you know, shortcuts or whatever. And then go to the speaker. Oh, I need 24 frames. Oh, well, like there's a little cute moment happening over here. Go back to 60 just to record that. It's just too much. And you might miss the moment.
So. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Very situational.
Very situational. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people like, they get so into the specific settings sometimes that you forget that like you can 100% break the rules if you know what you're doing. You know, there are a lot of movies that don't follow the shutter speed rule because they want it to feel more jittery.
Right.
They want it to feel more, you know, real and documentary feeling. So they increase the shutter speed way past, you know, the 180 angle rule, mm-hmm. or the double the shutter speed rule. And even slowing it down, it gives you that weird, dreamy, like super blurry, like, you know, motion blur. Like that is a style in its own. So it's like, if you really know what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you break the rules, if you know how to use it to your advantage. Like, right. I know what comment you're talking about specifically for that. That was for an interview, right? We were shooting a tripod interview in an office and it was 60 frames and 120 shutter. And like people went off the walls saying like, oh my God, like, why would you guys do that? The truth is that doesn't really matter.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not, the interview is not some sort of cinematic experience. There's no like movement happening. It's a still shot. If you just use it in the right way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it didn't really change anything.
And that's not like, that's a more recent comment, right? It's mm-hmm. like, there's been so many other times. If you go through all of our social medias, anytime that happens, there's at least a few comments where they're like, why is this happening right now?
Yeah.
And I think the only thing I can say is like, filmmaking is not like math. You know, like 2 + 2 does not equal 4 all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? You're able to give a different answer and get a different result. It doesn't need to be exactly that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people also forget that like filmmaking is very much a work with what you got sometimes, you know? Like sometimes you're thrown into a situation, you might not have the best lighting and you just kind of have to work with the gear you have to get the shot that you need. I remember like specifically we were in an environment where it was just like so bright and we had to increase the shutter speed to 120. But at the same time, you know, I didn't want it to be too jittery. So I had to use 60 frames and 120. So that way it would lower the exposure and like people will go off the walls for that. But yeah, it is what it is. You know, haters gonna hate.
Yeah, very situational, like all the time. It's mm-hmm. once you get really into the field and you're working in those environments where things need to get done at a time and it's really, you don't have time to change your settings. That's not the goal. The goal is to make the client feel good and be able to match what they need, whether that's their time, right? Or it is usually their time, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. when it comes down to time, it's you need to get things done. And I think weddings really helped in that. Like when you shoot weddings, it's you don't have all the time in the world. You only have the few minutes. And when you're working with a client, it's like, okay, let's have you stand here. You're gonna walk up to the window, look out the window, mm-hmm. give a little tint smile, and we're gonna shoot it a few times. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay. And you go, and then they shoot it, and you know, and then now the photographer needs to shoot it. So you don't have the time to, you know, be adjusting stuff all the time. You do it very quickly and mm-hmm. get things done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On that note, I really want to tell people that if you're a new filmmaker, 100% wedding filmmaking is like the most practical and useful industry you can start off in, because one, most of the time you do not need a degree. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you don't have to have gone to film school. If you have enough experience and maybe you get a chance to work for free for somebody and build a portfolio, like that is an area where you can build a portfolio and make thousands of dollars, you know, slowly through this progression in the wedding film industry. And it teaches you all the fundamental basics, right? Like directing, camera focal length, camera settings, lighting, audio. Like those are so important outside of the wedding industry and just in the regular film world that it really helps you touch upon all those things and get a really good handle on it, right? And then editing, right? Yeah. And then when you take all those components and put it into Premiere Pro or DaVinci, whatever, and start putting it together, you're building a story. And it's a real story. It's someone's life. I just feel like wedding filmmaking really helped us get to a whole different level, which is funny enough to say, but it really did. You know
definitely.
What I mean?
Yeah. Definitely. It definitely has like all its plus. And I so agree. Like there's so many people out there that I see on like Facebook groups. So if you're starting like in weddings right now and you've never shot a wedding before, the first thing I would do is go to Facebook groups and start joining local Facebook groups for weddings. So wedding marketplaces on Facebook. And people will literally be like, hey, I'm looking for a new wedding videographer who's willing to charge like $500 to $1,000 mm-hmm. to shoot my wedding. Mm-hmm. And it's like $500 to $1,000, first off, is like a lot of money for a day's work mm-hmm. for a lot of people, right? And at the same time, these people know what type of risk they're taking. They're like, we're looking for new people. Hence, I have a budget. So if you were to mess up, then they should understand, you know, at the end of the day, because that's what they paid for. And if I think a lot of people are scared to get into wedding, like videography and photography, because they think they're going to mess someone's day up. But just do like very safety things, right? Like shoot with like dual SD cards. Go on like Google or just message us and be like, hey, what does a like wedding day look like? Because like as soon as you have a wedding day down, it's the same wedding day like over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Also, you can just become a second shooter to someone, mm-hmm. right? And just second shoot them and realize, okay, this is how a wedding, like you don't need to go into first shooting like right away. As a second shooter, like your life is easy. Like
so easy.
When I come to a second shoot, I'm like, oh, easiest day ever, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're shooting mm-hmm. with the guys, like, takes no skill, pretty much, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, like, you're just, like, my second shooters pretty much don't have to do anything, and I could still perform and give a like, video at the end of the day to the client that would look almost the same as when I have a second shooter. But if the second shooter is good and can get different angles, like that'll help a lot within the highlight film. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to say is the second shooter will not make me miss any important moments, whether I have one or not. Mm-hmm. I'm usually shooting everything. Mm-hmm. And the only times that they would miss an important moment is if I told them like, hey, I'm gonna record the bride coming down, but you need to get the groom's face the whole time. Just stick on his face. And like, that's the one time I'm like, okay, do that. Cause I'm not gonna pan over to the groom in that situation. So, but if I was alone, I would pan over to the groom, you know?
Yeah. 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 And that's why, again, we're talking about editing, like good editors, they know exactly what you're doing and how to use the footage to almost recreate that moment and make it feel like multiple cameramen. Yeah. So right, exactly. I talk to all like majority of the wedding clients, right? And it's like all, a lot of them ask like, do you need two videographers? And I always tell them the same thing. I'm like, if, well, it's situation depending, but like if you're just getting a highlight film and your videographer is good, you really don't. And I know so many videographers in the wedding industry that literally can do feature films by themselves with two or three camera setups, and they are better than some of these four-man teams that I see out there that just like have all this heavy-duty equipment and bring a drone in and they look fancy as shit. Yeah. But then when you see their final product, it's like, oh my God. That's actually one of the reasons why like I wanted to start, because like my cousin Megan, when I saw her wedding film and I remember being there were four guys. Four dudes, drone, like two camera angles, two on the other side, and they were all over the place. And when I saw the final video, I was just like, this looks like one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like the lack of variety and the editing and blah, blah, blah. So at the end of the day, like it really doesn't matter how many people, it's about, you know, how good that one person is in capturing all the important stuff. Because you don't need like five angles of the ceremony, you know
exactly.
what I mean?
Exactly, yeah, agreed. And a lot of the time, it's like when you have so many people, it's ruining the wedding experience for every single guest over there.
Yeah.
Because when I'm shooting weddings and it's like, okay, mm-hmm. there's like three photographers and four videographers, yeah. you know? Like, yeah. in the olden days when we used to get hired for like different people, right? And you go in and it's like, oh, I'm first shooter, but I also have like second, third, fourth sometimes. Right? And it's like, oh my God, like what are you guys gonna do? Like
where are you gonna stand so I'm not
in the middle? Like listen, like I'm gonna be in the middle. Okay. Like and are you guys also gonna be in the middle? You know, like because at that point it's like you're just getting in each other's way, it's gonna ruin the shot.
I'm going to go on a bit of a tangent in a second, too, because I'm sure we could do this, and I guess it depends on whether or not he decides to use the content. Mm-hmm. But I remember this live stream event you and I were doing one time for an Indian couple, and the venue was absolutely beautiful. It was like a greenhouse. They had Christmas lights going up the columns. They had this beautiful like high table, you know, where the bride and groom would sit and all the ceremony stuff would happen. But they hired way too many people. There were like six of us. I think you and me were doing the live stream, and then they had like two videographers and two photographers. And the one thing that we asked them, because we were live streaming to the rest of the family in India, we were like, hey, can you guys just make sure like you leave a little spot in the middle so we have like a center shot? And the entire time it was just like videographer and then photographer like rotating out of the middle. So the entire live stream, all you saw was like the back of people like the entire time. Yeah. And I was like, you definitely did not need this many people. Like your ceremony is an hour and a half long. You know, it's a really long freaking ceremony. You only need one photographer. Like how many photos of the ceremony do you need?
Yeah.
You don't need 400 repetitive shots just because one's on one side, one's the other side. It doesn't mean more capturing of the moment. Like the different angles isn't gonna make you feel special. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't make you feel warm and fuzzy inside because you got the two angles. You just need that one really good moment, right? And it's the classic, you know, quality over quantity. And I just feel like, yeah, people get bogged down so much by saying like, oh, yo, do you guys offer two videographers? And it's like, I can, but why? Mm-hmm. Do you really want to spend that money? I'm okay with it, but just letting you know, you don't need to. And I feel like a lot of studios will push it on to couples as well, which I think is kind of messed up. I'm not going to name drop because I don't want to get like in trouble, but there are some really expensive studios out there that I have done research on and like, you know, called them and asked about it. And they literally will say, if you have over 75 guests at your wedding, you need a secondary photographer. And I'm like, why? Yeah. And like, how much more is it? And you look at their pricing package and it's an extra like $1,000 to $1,500 for the secondary photographer. And it's like literally pointless.
Right.
Because we've done it, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like at this point in our career, we have like 200 to 300 weddings underneath our belt. And majority of the time, no one has ever reached out to us to be like, oh my gosh, like, did you guys get more angles of the ceremony? Well, we did. Here are some additional edits, right? Because, you know, from the raw files, 3,000 to 5,000 images, here's 200 of the ceremony. If you want more, we can give you 300 to 400 if you want. We just selected the best 200. And then they get the more photos and they're happy. But they've never been like, oh my gosh, like, did you get the alternative angle of this very same moment? They've never asked that.
Right, so right. Like, yeah. And that's why at the end of the day, we have sheets that make clients go through them. And it's like, what do you need?
Yes.
What is the most important? Mm-hmm. And we're going to have our photographer like capture that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like second videographer and photographers are oversold. I would say the times I do have a really good second videographer, the highlight film ends up being a little bit better, maybe like 10 to 20%. So like if you want a 10 to 20% better, you know, highlight film, then and you have the money, you know, might as well put it there. Like it is to have some good extra help.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not necessary.
No, it's a breath of relief for the team, right? Like, for example, if it's a super tight timeline and maybe the bride and groom are super far away, then yes, because you can't be in two places at once. But majority of the time, like specifically if it's a Western wedding, like a white people wedding, you're chilling. You're chilling the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right, let's get back into the nitty gritty. I had a bit of a tangent. This is another nerdy question, but what is your favorite gimbal movement and why?
Favorite gimbal movement?
Yeah.
I feel like it's depending on the situation. I would say my favorite gimbal movement is probably like a left to right, you know, like
just like a orbit.
Or no, I would say my favorite gimbal movement is a slight push in. Just gives it like a very like cinematic feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I've used it all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's funny because it used to be mine, and now my favorite movement is actually the opposite of yours. It's pulling back.
Yeah,
I feel pulling back. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It obviously it depends on the situation, but there's just something about to me revealing the environment, which kind of just gives it this like awe feeling. Versus like pushing in, you're like bringing the focus on the subject, either the person or maybe an item, right? The product itself. You're like focus on me, but like coming back is like, I don't know, if you're focusing on a person, you're like showing off the world that they're in. And I don't know, I just started loving that more and more. Yeah, so that's my favorite gimbal movement too.
I can see that being good gimbal movement.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of them are good depending how you use it, but
right.
Yeah, just very recently, I've been doing that with like corporate clients and like wedding clients and even products where I just like go back and show more of the environment. And yeah, it just has like a different feel to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just see it afterwards and I'm like, yeah, that looks sick. That's the best feeling. What's one thing you wish more people knew about video production?
One thing more people knew about video production.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really hard question.
Yeah.
I think I can give away like a secret or a tip that would go really good for like editing. I think a lot of our editors that we bring in that are like wedding editors specifically, we tell them to do like two things that like change the editing game for them. One is warp stabilize pretty much like everything, right? Like anything that's, you know, a little bit too shaky with movement, like needs to be stabilized. And the other one would be like slight push-ins. So if someone's giving a speech, usually we're just holding on that speech. If you can scale it for like a slight push-in while they're talking, it just gives it like such a better feel. And you know, things, little things like that is what really like changes an edit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about on like the corporate side or like our commercial side? Is there anything that maybe a tip you can give people to help them grow that side of their business?
Mm-hmm. Like business video production?
Yeah.
Side?
In video production, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I can't really like think of one right now. It's like a business tip. I don't know. I can't really like think of one right now. I think if you were to start a video production company today, the few steps I would take is first start a Google, like Google My Business, pop up on maps for like wherever you're located. Cause then anyone who's like locally looking for video production, you want to be there, and then just start getting like a bunch of reviews, right? Get so many reviews. Like at least 10 plus. Like I was talking to a friend the other day. I'm like, what do you think is like a legitimate like review? Like at what point are you like, this is a good amount of reviews and I trust this company? Mm-hmm. He was like 10. And I was like, yeah, like I agree with 10 reviews. Like 10 is pretty good. And then I was like, what about if someone had 100? Would you choose them over the 10? And he's like, yeah, probably. Because it's like, you know, if 10 people were standing in front of you and was like, hey, you know, this company's really good and there's 10 people versus like 100 people, you'd be like, yeah, 100 people is a lot more believable, right? So kind of like taking the same thing into reviews. But if you look at it, like no company really has over 100 reviews. Like there's very specific ones who have it, who've been going for like a long time, but a lot of people are under 100, you know, rolling around the 30 to 60 mark. Mm-hmm. So if you can get there, you're pretty good to go. And then on top of that, I would say having a really good website. Having a really good website that shows that you're professional, you have a team, mm-hmm. you've been doing this for a while, mm-hmm. Just making your website look really good, which is going to take a long time to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like most people don't understand this, but like when we first started our company, when we didn't have money, we had a lot of time, right? And when you have a lot of time and no money, what do you do with that time? You start developing those things you would end up paying for. right? So what we did was we started a website, right? And we built our own website from ground up. You know, a lot of people think, hey, like, I need to pay for someone to do my website. And it's like, dude, that's going to cost like, you know, $5,000-$10,000 or even more to have that. And at the beginning, you don't have that capital to put in. So when you have a lot of time, you should be spending it on doing the things that really grow your business. Mm-hmm. And then once you have that income, then you move into paying other people to do it for you.
For sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. I think now that I think about it now, yeah, you're 100% right, because both of our websites for the commercial and the wedding side, we developed ourselves, and we did it before we really blew up, right? And it really hasn't changed much since. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we really spent the time to like figure out what makes a website look good, what our competitors doing, our copywriting, which, I mean, all these things can still be developed and worked on, but 100%, like, if we didn't spend the time in the early stages to get that foundation, at least good, we probably wouldn't have landed the clients that we have now.
So, yeah, so true. Yeah. Yeah, reviews and websites is like one of the biggest things, and work, of course, in our industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say for myself, like, the one thing I wish people knew about video production is how important it is to have a system in place of like how you speak to the client, how you follow up with the client, you know, the sales process, how they're going to pay, because the more you can simplify this and explain it to the client, the more trust you build, the more willing their willingness to, like, you know, invest in you, the faster it is for them to make a deposit. And if you're scrambling to get these things and on the delay, it definitely like just kind of, there's a disconnect where they don't feel as you're professional, and then maybe they'll do one video with you, but they're going to explore another option on the second round. If you have it like seamlessly, that structure, that system, 100%, like, it just makes it easier for the client to feel the credibility and your professionalism, and they come back for more every single time. I think that's where a lot of filmmakers and maybe people who are starting production companies, like, they kind of neglect as well. Because what we were talking about earlier, like, you can't take all the roles on by yourself if you're trying to scale out. And if you have that system, it just makes things way easier for yourself down the line. And then it's like, if you're too busy and you don't have that structure, like, it'll slowly start crumbling, right? When one person or two people are doing all the work, it's like, it's just, you can just see the holes in the production itself and in the delivery. And, you know, the other things that are important, like asking for reviews, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely having a system and a structure is what makes a video production company, I think, stand out, and is what clients are expecting and want to pay for. They want, like, this really easy process. Mm-hmm. All the way through.
Yeah, most definitely. And I feel like from the beginning statement you made, it's like maybe some people will get, like, scared in the sense of, like, oh, I have to get, like, all these things down to perfection, like, right now, or I'm gonna, like, fail or, like, not do good. Mm-hmm. And to those people, all I can say is it just takes time. Like, we didn't know it at the beginning either, right? It just took a lot of time for us to be able to get to where we are now. And we still have, like, a lot to grow. Like, we didn't start tracking our, like, sales and our call to sales, usually on, like, the wedding end for that side, until, like, this year, like, recently this year. But now, like, I can go in and be like, okay, like, how much is our calls worth? Like, how much is each call worth? And, like, how many percent are we closing? And those are, like, really important things to know, because, you know, once someone steps off of that, you're able to bring someone new in and be like, are they doing as good as that other person? And what can we also do in the process to be able to grow that ratio? And, you know, these little things really help a company develop into, you know, what makes a really big company eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're 100% right there. Mm-hmm. For sure. Okay, I think I have one question left, and then then we'll move on to your questions. Do you have advice for other videographers or freelancers or video production companies who are struggling?
It's if I was to give some advice to a production company or filmmakers who are struggling, I would first try to figure out what you would want. So is it, you know, the money? Usually, you know, as a company, if you're struggling, it probably means it is the money. Or if maybe you're not getting like enough work. I think if all of it comes down to like just being very patient, being very patient and waiting and really, you know, working at it, but knowing at the end of the day that it's all gonna work out to what you want, and not being patient as in like just sitting on your ass all day and like not doing anything. I mean, like, bring me the money, you know, like as long as you're working at your craft, you will end up getting some sort of result from it, whether good or bad. And those will lead to other results. I think like an example I have is, I don't know if you've watched the new documentary, the Pepsi documentary. So pretty much there's a top 10 Pepsi documentary right now on Netflix. It's a really good documentary. And this kid pretty much ends up suing Pepsi for not delivering on a commercial they made, on a very like obvious commercial they made. And Pepsi ends up like suing the kid. It's like this whole like court fight. And at the end of it, I was like, even though Pepsi might have not profited from this, from the media, like back in the day, now they're getting like all this advertising towards Pepsi that they would have not gotten. And you would have like never seen that happening like 30 years later. You know, like it's been so long since that happened. But now an old case is like repopped up over Netflix. And, you know, people are always going to have their opinions on whether it's right or wrong. But as a brand, as long as you can get out there and put yourself in front of people and not be like too over the top bad, as long as it's like a little bad, like it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you're going to get those eyes on you and the attention on you, and people are going to, you know, it's a form of advertisement at the end of the day. But to my point, you never would have thought that Pepsi would have got all this advertisement years later. It was a bad thing, but now it's a pretty good thing for them.
So you're saying that like for anyone who's struggling, just put yourself out there, even if you make mistakes, it's okay. As long as you continue to work on what you're doing, eventually in the long term, even some of your past mistakes could be good mistakes.
That exactly.
Fruitful.
Yeah.
Okay. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that too. Yeah. I mean, for anyone who's struggling, definitely hard work is the only thing that is going to determine whether or not you become successful. And yes, working on your craft, putting yourself out there, but working on the things behind the scenes as well. I think it's super important to work on yourself as a videographer as well, because ultimately when you're talking to a client, like if you are the person talking to the client, if you're in that position, you are selling yourself. You know, it's really difficult for them to trust the rest of your team if you're the face of the company, or if you're the one who is directly in contact with them and you're the project manager, and if they don't have that trust. And then working on the business as well, right? So we already talked about building the website, but there's so many other things like content creation and putting yourself out there again, as well as, you know, maybe building connections, networking. I remember in the very beginning, like we definitely did cold calling and we went door to door, which was absolutely the worst thing ever. I hated it so much. And we made so many mistakes. I don't really care about this TV going off, but we made so many mistakes in the beginning. I remember we went door to door with this flyer offering like restaurants, like 10 promo videos for like $500. This was like the cheapest thing ever. And our flyer had like typos in it, and we didn't even realize till after we got it back from Vistaprint, and we were like, fuck it, let's go, right? And we went and we would like advertise it. And we did this for like, I think a couple of days, but we hit like every single store we could on Yonge Street where we were living in our one bedroom apartment with like three dudes. And we didn't get any business from it. But I think what happened was that we were either talking about our goals or we were talking about like just putting ourselves out there. And at that time, like, we had no followers, but we had one guy who was in real estate, saw what we were doing, and he was like, I want to work with you guys. And then that one connection turned into a series of real estate videos, which turned into, you know, connections within the real estate community, which turned into event coverage, which turned into corporate events, and it just became this thing. So, like, yes, we definitely made mistakes, you know, but we put ourselves out there. We tried to do, like, all the behind the scenes things, like advertising and marketing, on top of working on our craft. And yeah, I think it took a while for us to get to a certain position, but yeah, it paid off. And for anyone who's struggling, 100% just believe in yourself. Look at the other things that you might not be paying attention to. Focus on that, and the you know, reap what you sow. You know, the what's the word I'm looking for? The fruit will come.
Yeah,
you'll get the fruit eventually.
The fruit shall come.
Yeah,
I think, like, relationships are so important in this business and anything in life. Like, relationships is pretty much number one out of anything.
Yeah.
Right? We're very, like, social human beings, and we really care about our relationships. And even when we're on sets, like, the people who are the most successful are usually very, like, welcoming people and very nice. And they're like, mm-hmm. oh, what can I do for you? Like, how can we get this done? You know? Mm-hmm. And relationships are so important. And people go into school just for relationships. Like, when I didn't go to school, I started asking people, like, what's the most important, best thing you've learned in school? And they're like, oh, they'd be like, I barely learned anything. And then they'd follow up with, but the relationships I made was very good. You know, those are, like, what I took away from it. And the relationships, you know, ended up getting them jobs, and just progress them, like, within their life. So if you're able to build relationship mm-hmm. with people, yeah. you're gonna make it very, very far.
How do you build relationships, though? Because that is a very, like, it's almost like a person depending thing too. You know, some people mm-hmm. are introverted, some people are extroverted. Some people go to school to build connections. Some people, like, do you have, like, any tips for building connections?
Yeah, I think it depends, like, where you are. I think if you are able to give more value than you're taking to anyone in any situation, it kind of puts you in a place where they're like, oh, this person tried to help me, right? Whether, you know, that's somewhere on set and someone new is on set and they're like, how do I do this and this? And you're like, mm-hmm. oh, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. Or you're like a PA, you know, on a set and, you know, the director or someone needs something and you're able to, like, see that beforehand and you're like, hey, here's some water. Like, I haven't seen you drink any water. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been, you know, working a lot. How can I make it easier for you? Mm-hmm. You know, just putting yourselves in those situations where you're helping that other person. And if you're able to help people, you're always, you know, doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. It's almost just like, be kind to people, mm-hmm. right? I feel like it can be kind of weird, though. Like, you don't want to go up to somebody with this behind the scenes intention of, like, oh, you know, if I help this person, maybe they'll give me a project, maybe they'll pay me money for their next commercial. So there is that tough balance. I feel like 100% you want to be helpful, and it's also just trying to be genuine, because people can feel that,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Especially when you're high status. You know, let's say you're at a network marketing event or you're at a corporate event, you know, and you're the videographer. If you go up to the CEO of the company and act super friendly, you know, they're going to kind of feel that you are trying to maybe get the next project or something. So there is that balance of, like, trying to help people, but also being authentic.
Right.
Right. And just making sure that you're helping somebody, but maybe also making sure that you're not doing it just to get something out of them.
Yeah, exactly. You're just genuinely trying to help someone because mm-hmm. you want to help them, you know, and if a project sparks, it does. If not, then it is what it is, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of times it won't.
Yeah, a lot of the times it won't, but don't get discouraged. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have a really good story about networking and then also not overlooking people. So we had a client come through for a music video, and we just mentioned this earlier, how, like, a lot of up and coming artists don't have big budgets. So this guy came to us, his name is I'm not gonna name him actually. So this guy came up to us with a budget of $1,000 for a music video. And anyone who knows, music videos for $1,000 are very difficult. You're like shooting in alleyways, you know, right, or your friend's apartment, or like you're getting a car and shooting in the street. And it can look good, but you're missing out on the key things. And at the time in our company, it was just not worth our time. So I deferred him to one of our friends, a really good friend who's worked with us, who's straight out of film school. He was an incredible DOP. And I was like, you know what? He'll take care of you. If the budget worked, it was good. He did the first music video for him, and I saw it, and I was like, this was awesome. Like, with what you had available, you killed it. And we actually lent him our camera for this because we just wanted to help him out. And then that same artist wanted another music video. And this time, instead of $1,000, he paid $1,500. At that time, like, still, I'm not going to take that. We're too busy. But our friend did the job. Same thing. We let him borrow our camera. Absolutely killed the music video. Fast forward 8 months later, the most recent music video that he produced for that same artist was $16,000.
Damn.
Right? So it's like, you can't overlook some of the connections that you make. You know, you never know who's going to end up being the next superstar. You know, genuinely go into a project with the kindness to help somebody, put your best foot forward. And if they like you, they'll continue to work with you. And then who knows, 8 months from now, your next project might be 1,600% more profitable.
So, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Building, you know, any relationship is always more profitable than building none.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. That's my list of questions.
I'm on to my questions.
Okay.
Eh?
Okay.
All right. I only have a few questions, so I think this is a pretty technical one. How would you cheat a scene to make it look like there's more people than there actually is?
Definitely one thing you can do is use set design, right? Using depth of field, putting people in the foreground as well as the background, using a tighter focal length, right? Instead of shooting wide, like a 50 or 35, go to 135, go to 70 to 200 and shoot super tight, and then use those same techniques of putting people in the foreground as the background to kind of make it fill up the frame. we've definitely done it quite a few times, and it worked in our favor. I'm trying to think if there's any other tips that I can think of to make a scene feel more full with less people.
I think that's the one I was trying to get through is, because I think it's a huge tip. Like, you know, instead of hiring like hundreds of people for a club scene, you can literally take like 10, 15 of them, shoot at a very high like focal length, right? Mm-hmm. And then you place them properly, and it looks like there's a lot more people in there.
Yeah.
You know, and then you just reuse those same people in different scenes, switch their outfits and reuse them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to re-answer that question because I just think I thought of like the three things that you can do, which will be kind of good for like Instagram, I think. So three things people can do to really make a scene feel more full when you don't have enough like actors or background people is, one, definitely use like your environment, using depth of field, putting people in the foreground as well as the background, and maybe having them move through the scene to kind of make it feel a little bit more dynamic and that there's more people. That's definitely the first thing I would do. The second thing I would definitely do is also use a tighter focal length, you know, obviously not like a 50s, 85, 135, 200, like those type of focal lengths will compress your background and really make it, when you use the same technique of putting people in the foreground and the background, it definitely feels more full. And then the third thing that you can do, which is more in the realm of video effects, but you can definitely like, I'm not sure what the exact term for it, but you can stitch together multiple pieces of video. So let's say you're doing a wide shot, you know, and it's, let's say you have a static angle. You can technically film everybody on this side dancing and doing their thing. Let's say it's a club scene, and then take that same group of people, change their outfits, put them on this side, you know, and then in the editing, cut the video down the middle so that you have almost two crowds. Of course, you know, you're gonna have to play with that a lot, but it is a technique that you can do.
I like that.
Yeah.
Those are some good tips. If someone wanted to become a videographer or photographer today, Do you think there's still time, or is it a dying industry?
Oh my gosh, 100% you still have time. If anything, the industry is just getting bigger and bigger, and people are looking for more content nowadays more than ever. So 100%, I think there's more room. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think for a very, very long time, we're gonna have so much content creation, mm-hmm. like more than ever before, there's so much content being created. So the opportunity to become a starter videographer, filmmaker, or photographer is huge.
What would you recommend for people who are not currently in the film industry or the photography game and they want to start? What would you recommend?
I would just start trying to get my foot into doors of opportunity where you're able to shoot things. I think the only thing you can do is just shoot until you become, you know, decently good where you're like, hey, I can charge for this.
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
My other question was how valuable a relationship is with a client, which we kind of answered. Mm-hmm. Film school, yay or nay?
Film school, yay or nay? Okay, realistically, I don't think film school is necessary to get into the film industry. It's very expensive, first of all, and you could literally spend that money to start your own video production company, or you can buy your own gear and shoot for free and go work for somebody else if you wanted to. But I feel like film school does a lot of showing you the things that you can't always get from freelancing. You know, there's a lot of technical things that are involved when it comes to filmmaking, like what happens when you're distributing your video? You know, how do you get in contact with streamers like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon? How about broadcast, right? There are certain technical things that aren't always available online. Yes, you can find it online, but it's not as easily found. You have to do really deep dives and you have to know what you're looking for. And I feel like film school is kind of that shortcut where it's like, if you don't know what you don't know what you don't know, right? And film school will kind of give you maybe the blueprint to start figuring out what you want to do. But do I think it's 100% necessary? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree also. I think it's just way too expensive for what you're getting at, and in such an early age to be spending and going into debt at so much. Mm-hmm. There's so much you can learn off of YouTube. And I think one thing we did is like we had friends in film school, right? So we would just go into some of their projects. Mm-hmm. And then once we started our company, it's like, okay, we don't know what this is. Hey, do you remember what you learned in school about this? You know, and you kind of, as long as you have those relationships, you're able to, you know, get the information.
100%. Yeah. And that's what we did, right? Mm-hmm. When we started our production company, we knew people in film school and they were lucky enough to allow us to be a part of their production. And actually, funny enough, the first camera we got, the A6300, for some reason, I guess at the time, our camera was better than what they were providing the students. So they actually used our A6300 in like their first commercial. And there was like 20 students here, you know, they were doing like set design. They had this like massive dolly, right? And then had like a tiny little A6300 on it. And it was the funniest thing. But, you know, that was our chance to kind of see what the film industry was going to be like if we did go to school. And yeah, we just decided that it wasn't for us. Mm-hmm. I have a great story actually, because it has to do with like Ryerson. So I actually applied for film school. I was trying to get into the Ryerson program, and this was straight out of high school. It was like, you know, the first thing I was thinking of doing. So I applied and they rejected me, right? So fast forward a year later, we started a video production company, you know, we're grinding away. And then fast forward to 2021, after building all that portfolio and getting ourselves recognized in the industry, Ryerson actually reached out to us to send us interns for their film program, which was hilarious to me because they rejected us, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a really like fun story where I think about like, when people ask me if film school is worth it, that's one of the first things I think about. Like, I'm at the position now from not going to school where people from school are trying to intern for me. And it's like...
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not always like the right way of doing it. And there's so many directors and any type of people out there who didn't go to school and are superbly successful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Dope. That's all my questions that I had. Cool. We answered most of them before, so.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Well, if you're on the podcast version, thanks for sitting through this. If you actually did sit through all of this, it's probably like, what, 2 hours long?
I think more than that, man.
Yeah, congratulations. I hope you got a lot of knowledge out of this. And, you know, if you want to see more like this, let us know. We're going to be clipping some of this out for Instagram. So if you're not following us on Instagram, @OriginFilms, if you want to save some time, we'll clip it out for you.